May it please the court. Good morning. My name is Matt Kinney, and I represent the appellants Earth Island Institute and Sequoia Forest Keeper. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. This appeal presents the question of whether the U.S. Forest Service may avoid the acreage limitations of its commercial timber sale rules under the National Environmental Policy Act by relying on a categorical exclusion for road maintenance activities like pruning vegetation where hazard trees are being cut.
Well, now, the problem here is that the wildfire burned vegetation on both sides of the road, did it not?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So why isn't this just part of road maintenance activities in order to remove danger trees from a 300-foot radius?
Because it involves a commercial timber sale, and if you look at the Forest Service's...
So what? I mean, there may very well be salvageable burned trees that the Forest Service can make some money off of that are harvested, but isn't the primary purpose here to protect the public traveling on the road from damaged trees that may fall across the road in the wind and so on?
Well, I think the important point there is it's not the purpose for which the project is intended, but its impacts and the categorical exclusion rules.
We have a 29,000 acre wildfire burn area here. I don't understand. This is not a normal timber sale where the Forest Service picks several thousand acres and said, okay, we're gonna put this timber up for sale. The problem is that you've got all this burned wood still standing on both sides of the road that presents a danger to the traveling public.
Well, it wasn't an immediate danger. You know, the agency took a year to develop this and then a year to carry it out. And certainly if there are trees hanging over the edge of the road, the Forest Service may and probably did cut them quickly under Category 4 for road maintenance or whatever it is. But the problem is when it plans a timber sale, there is a categorical exclusion specifically for hazardous.
So is your argument that if it stood for a year, it's not really a danger? That's not your argument, is it?
No, not that it's not a danger, but not that it's not a particular hurry. They have plenty of time. There's no doubt that the agency has the discretion to carry out a timber sale of salvaged timber. But when it is not an emergency, as it isn't in this case, it has the time to develop an environmental assessment.
The Forest Service made a determination that these trees posed a hazard to the traveling public, and the analysis basically was, if we don't conduct this maintenance activity, we're going to have to close the roads.
No,
you may not think that's an emergency, but I mean the Forest Service gave a pretty reasonable explanation for what they were trying to do here along what 50.2 miles of forest roads.
That's certainly fine that they carry it out, but it just has to be done with an environmental assessment, which can be carried out and normally is in a couple of months, just as quickly as the categorical exclusion. The problem is, without an environmental assessment, you don't have any range of alternatives. So, for instance, Earth Island was urging the Forest Service to leave more logs on the ground because they're needed for wildlife purposes. That would have been an alternative they could have looked at.
The record shows that most of the wildlife, particularly the threatened or endangered species, had essentially been burned out of this area. And with, I think, the exception of one den for a fisher that was somewhere along the route, it wasn't really suitable at this point for wildlife habitability, was it?
Well, but they come back, and that's a question for the agency to examine more fully in an environmental analysis. You know, the comments by Earth Island were that's not the case, and that the wildlife come back to an area if you don't take out all the logs.
So is your concern here that had the acreage been restricted to less than 250 acres, the Forest Service could have done whatever it wanted in terms of road maintenance and removal of danger trees?
Well, if it was under 250 acres, they could have claimed the exemption from an environmental analysis.
So your answer is yes.
Yes.
That it wouldn't have required an environmental impact statement, that the categorical exclusion would apply.
That's right, under E13.
Yeah.
But D4 is not ever to be used for a commercial timber sale. If you look at their rules...
You keep saying commercial timber sale, and I think the Forest Service is trying to draw a distinction between the sale of salvageable wood in conjunction with road maintenance activities and the removal of danger trees.
Yep.
And I don't know of anything in the Multi-Use Forest Act that prevents the Forest Service from making multiple use of what is otherwise lost timber.
No, they can certainly make multiple use. It's the matter of what level of NEPA compliance they have to do. If you look at the...
But is your position that every time the Forest Service sells a tree, an environmental impact statement is required?
Every time a commercial timber sale of over 250 acres, at least an environmental assessment, not an EIS, even that's a much bigger...
Even if it's been destroyed in a wildland forest fire and the Forest Service is trying to protect the traveling public from harm.
Yes, its rules in E13 is specifically for harvest of trees damaged by wind, ice, and fire. And so...
Maybe we go to a different...
Could I just go to a threshold question, which is troubling me, which is why this appeal isn't moot, given that the Bull Run project now is completely done. You don't seem to argue that there's any relief we could give you on the Bull Run project, but are looking only at the capable of repetition yet evading review exception. And yet the government argues that in this very case, there are cases that are stayed which raise the same issue, and since they're stayed, a decision could be made on whether this D4 is applicable. So doesn't that just strip us of jurisdiction to consider your issue?
No, Your Honor. The two cases are before the same judge, Judge O'Neill, and so for one thing, there would be no reason to believe that he would rule any differently without intervention by this court. And two, while the cases are stayed...
Well, that doesn't really matter how he'll rule. I guess if the injunction is in place, then you can appeal and there would be relief that the appellate court could give. At this point, I guess I'm not seeing what relief we could provide and why a decision on this issue shouldn't wait for a case where the panel could provide relief. So help me understand that.
The two other cases, the cases are stayed, but the logging's not stayed. There's no injunction in place. And one of them that we've mentioned has moved forward. Another one, I think, is still pending. But so if those cases move forward, assuming Judge O'Neill would rule the same as he did in this case, that the Forest Service is allowed to rely on its...
Did you seek an injunction of the project or the activity on the ground?
In the other cases?
Uh-huh.
No.
No. So why not? So it wasn't that the district court ruled against you. You sought an injunction of the activity, and the court ruled against you. You just haven't asked to stay the activity.
Because it's the exact same question that's presented in this case. And so and it's before the very same
question.
Judge.
So your view is we should answer this question abstractly, even though there's no relief we can give.
Declaratory relief. Like in any case involving capable of repetition, there's no relief that a court can grant.
Okay, so we've said, however, that where it's possible to get a stay of the activity on the ground, the party has to do that. Otherwise, it's moot, and the capable of repetition exception doesn't apply. So we've said that in multiple different cases, I guess.
Are you talking about in the case before the court or in the other cases that may repeat?
We're talking about the Bunker Limited Partnership versus the United States, where it says, where your own failure to seek or obtain a stay has prevented the court from reviewing the trial court's decision, that we should not apply an exception to the mootness doctrine.
Well, this...
And when you didn't seek, you didn't appeal the denial of the preliminary injunction, you didn't seek the stay pending appeal, therefore it seems to me, given, and I'm just thinking what Judge Ikuda is trying to ask you, but that's where I came to, that Bunker Limited would say I shouldn't even get into this case. If you'd have done something to help yourself, maybe I'd say it has something to do with capable of repetition. But since you didn't, I don't know why I'm using the court's power to help you.
Well, I know in the Alcoa versus Bonneville case, this court stated that a party need not seek a stay pending appeal.
That was a real different case, like the other one you rely on, Alaska Center, where a contract or a permit expires by its own terms. There's nothing to enjoin because you can't enjoin a permit or a contract from expiring. But we don't apply those rules when there's some conduct that could be stayed, so there would be a possibility for meaningful relief.
I think it's the same thing because here you have a permit to conduct a commercial timber sale to a timber contractor, and in those other cases, it's a permit to carry out some other activity. But I think it seems like the key...
Well, there's a contract in the case of Alcoa. It was a contract for sale of power at a certain rate for a certain period of time. There's nothing to stay, whereas you certainly can stay the Bull Run project, which is removing timber and selling it.
Well, the Alaska Center case involved a helicopter outfitter permit. That
certainly was a permit that expired by its term, so a license had been given and it simply expired. And the question was, could you enjoin the license from expiring? And the answer was no, so the court went ahead and heard it. It's more like a pregnancy case. You can't stay a person from having a baby. So that's why they use that exception for capable of repetition yet evading review. But here, it's clear that it falls within the headwaters in American Horse case, where there's actual conduct being undertaken by an agency that could be stayed, and then it wouldn't happen. So assuming that those cases are more on point, why wouldn't this case be moot?
Well, I still think it fits within the bounds of Alaska Center. The plaintiff could have sought a stay of that helicopter permit and enjoin the helicopter permit.
How do you enjoin a permit?
You say the permit's void. You may no longer do helicopter trips, and that would have alleviated the harm of the plaintiffs, which was incursions of helicopters into their wilderness experience. So I think it's the same. And I would say forcing parties to file emergency motions, because you're not seeking a stay where you're denied a permit, even though it's referred to sometimes. You have to seek an emergency motion for injunction pending appeal. And there's all sorts of language how that's an extraordinary remedy, and it has to be decided quickly, and so you're forcing panels to decide these large issues in the context of emergency motions. And it doesn't seem like that is the way for an orderly proceeding of federal questions to get decided. I see I only have 3 minutes left. I would reserve it for rebuttal.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Jeff Bielert. I'm here from the Department of Justice on behalf of the Forest Service. I'm joined today by intervener Sierra Forest Products. I'm going to take 11 minutes and allow them 4 minutes for argument. I will. Thank you, Your Honor.
And Sierra Forest Products was the contractor?
That's correct, Your Honor, and they're intervener in this case, yes, and in the district court. So you're absolutely right. This case is moot. The project itself, the only component of this project that Earth Island is challenging is the timber sale. So there are other aspects of this project. So the Bull Run project encompasses both the removal of hazardous trees, and there are some reforestation activities that are ongoing and will continue. So Judge Ikuda, you mentioned, you know, the project itself is complete. Actually, no, that's not quite accurate. The component of the project that they challenged, the one thing they're challenging this appeal, they've narrowed it down to this timber sale. That was completed in December of 2015, or excuse me, 2018. So after the completion of that timber sale, all the trees have been removed under that timber sale. Earth Island is not challenging any other removal of trees or the reforestation activities or anything else. They're only challenging that timber sale. And the Forest Service in this case, there are, and I mentioned this, under the capable of repetition, not evading review, there are two other projects. The Pier Fire project, the sale, the contract has not even been awarded. So it is the same parties, it's before the same district court judge. The Pier Fire project is also proceeding under the same categorical exclusion. This is that subsection D4, but nothing yet has occurred. So our argument here is, even if you get to the point where you say, is this capable of repetition, not evading review, we know it's capable of being repeated because it is being repeated, and it's not necessarily evading review because in that case, nothing yet has occurred. So absolutely, Earth Island can seek an injunction, as they did in this case, and if they need to seek an injunction for the appellate proceedings, they're more than able to do so.
So has logging commenced on Pier Fire?
No, logging on Pier Fire has not. Spear Creek is the other project that we mentioned, and Spear Creek, I believe, there is ongoing tree removal that's under that project. And again, as you just heard them admit, they did not seek an injunction to stop that from occurring. So
they say under Alcoa and Alaska Center, that we've said that at times there's no requirement to seek an injunction under certain circumstances, and they argue that particularly Alaska Center is applicable here.
Yeah, and I disagree with that, Your Honor, for the reasons that the panel just mentioned. I mean, it is a unique circumstances analysis. So you have to look at what are the unique circumstances of each one of these cases. And in this case, the alleged harm, what they are alleging is that the removal of trees is somehow harming them, that this commercial aspect is somehow harming them. It doesn't really make much sense, because if you look at their brief, they're saying, well, we're okay with the removal of trees. We just don't want you to haul them out. Well, so what's the injury, right? I don't understand what they're actually getting across here, but my point is, if that's what they're worried about, if they're worried about trees being removed that are hazardous trees that have the capability of hitting the road, they can get an injunction that will enjoin them. And what the district court did, when they sought a preliminary injunction, one of the things the district court had to consider is irreparable harm. And when it looked at irreparable harm, it looked at the environmental impacts of the activities that were being proposed at that time. And on this record, the Forest Service proceeded under a categorical exclusion. There's a provision, 40 CFR 15.08.4, that tells you when extraordinary circumstances. And it says to the Forest Service, if you want to proceed under a categorical exclusion, you need to take into account threatened or endangered species and sensitive species. The Forest Service looked at this regulation and it complied with it. It went to the Fish and Wildlife Service for the mountain yellow-legged frog, and it went and looked at the biological assessment, the biological evaluation. It looked at 13 species for the management indicator species, and it looked at another 6 species under the biological evaluation. Mountain yellow-legged frog, no occurrence in this project area. Spotted owls, 82,000 acres of available habitat on this forest. This project impacts 638 acres.
Right, but that's not the issue is whether the Forest Service appropriately relied on 4D or D4, excuse me, which doesn't obviously apply to this situation, and the other one that they cite seems much closer to the description of the work, but it's not applicable because the size of the acreage is larger. This is just a question as to whether the Forest Service experience is this is the sort of thing that doesn't cause harm. And they make a very strong argument that the categorical exemption you relied on doesn't really fit as compared to the other one. I mean, if we reach the merits, why would we defer to the Forest Service's analysis that D4 was better than, I guess it's...
E13 is what they're... Yeah, right. So D4, what D...
13.
Yeah, I realize there's a lot of subsections here. So to be clear, D4 talks about the repair and maintenance of roads, and then it has examples, and it says, but are not limited to, and then it provides...
none of them actually fit what you were doing. They're
right, so if you look at
minor, much less invasive.
Right. So if you look at the decision memo, and this is at excerpts of record 70 to 82, the Forest Service lays out why it's relying on these particular categorical exclusions. And it points to three, and I'll just stick to D4 for one moment. It's repair and maintenance of roads. And so then you look at the handbook, the Forest Service's handbook, and this is the consistent judgment of the Forest Service. When it talks about road maintenance, the Forest Service handbook, and this is at supplemental excerpt of records 301 to 303, you go to the Forest Service handbook and it tells you, road maintenance includes the removal of dangerous trees. It also tells you and specifically cites subsection D4. And it tells the Forest Service managers, you can look at subsection D4, apply this categorical exclusion for the removal of trees, and that falls within road maintenance. Why does that make sense? Roads are a very busy, there's 1 million people that visit this forest every single year. There's also not just visitors with kids in minivans, but there's fire truck with firefighters. There's a whole bunch of people that are using these roads. To maintain those roads, and Judge Tallman brought this up, if the Forest Service did not go forward with removing these hazardous trees, it would have to close over 50 miles of road. And the reason it would have to close those roads is because of the danger that these trees posed. And so when it looks at this provision that tells it, you can maintain roads by doing a whole bunch of things that are listed in this categorical exclusion. In the decision memo itself, it says it falls within the general scope of this exclusion, when in fact the Forest Service handbook tells it that it falls within this exclusion. And so there's nothing arbitrary and capricious about the Forest Service's actions. And that's what we're doing here before this court. What you have is a decision by the Forest Service that is being applied under the APA's deferential standard of review. And in Alaska Center, this is a case that we've cited.
The only time we have a deferential standard of review is when the regulation is ambiguous. If I read this regulation, and in the natural reading of it, is that it isn't ambiguous, and it says if you didn't do what you should have done, then I don't have to give any deference to the Forest Service, do I?
Well, so let me, there's a lot of deference going on here, but in making...
I mean, appreciate you want to have deference here.
No.
But if I read E13, which is the one I specifically...
Yes.
I don't think we need to give you any deference there. It seems to me there's a natural reading that indicates that the salvage provision should govern, and the natural reading would be that you shouldn't do it under that way, under E13.
Right.
I wouldn't need to give any deference to anybody. I just read it, and that's what it says.
Okay, so let me quickly do two things. One, Alaska Center, this is a case that we've cited, and it says whether a project falls within a particular category of exclusion is a factual determination that implicates substantial agency expertise. That's the Alaska Center. So the application, looking at these categorical exclusions, I'm not even in the world of Kaiser, I'm not Auer, I'm not Seminole Rock, I'm talking about Alaska Center. And it tells you it's a factual determination implicates substantial agency expertise. Then you look to McNair. You, as a panel of this court is not a panel of scientists. You are most deferential when you're reviewing scientific judgments and technical analyses by an agency. So, again, there's deference that's owed when we, the Forest Service, are looking at applying our own expertise. Now, you're absolutely right, Your Honor. We cite this in the same day that I filed my brief in this case, the Solicitor General filed brief in Kaiser. Kaiser, as you know, the Supreme Court had to look as whether Auer and Seminole Rock survives a challenge. And the court held, yes, it is not going to overrule those two decisions. You're absolutely right that you have to find that the statute is ambiguous. You have to find that it's genuine ambiguity.
If I don't find that, after having exhausted all traditional tools of construction to understand the meaning,
right,
quoting Kaiser, then at that point I don't give any deference to the Forest Service, right?
Well, you have to go through the process that Kaiser gets out. But yes, if you actually found, and I, to be clear here, I'm not relying on deference. My first level argument, and I cite this in my brief, was that we, on the plain text of this, and that looking at our handbook, this is the consistent judgment, fair and considered judgment of the Forest Service, that within D4, that this applies. This court had before it previously, this is the American Forest Conservation case, this was a district court decision that applied this categorical exclusion as it existed in the handbook. It applied it in the district court to a removal of trees on something like 15,000 acres. It came up on appeal, and it was affirmed. The judgment was affirmed on a similar exact word-to-word D4 subsection that this court affirmed. It was an unpublished decision. I recognize that. But it's an unpublished decision, Your Honor, but this court should reach the same outcome here. I ask you to affirm the judgment in favor of the Forest Service and allow the interveners time.
All right.
Thank you.
May it please the court, Sarah Gaffori on behalf of Sierra Forest Products, the purchaser of the Bull Run timber sale. With me in the courtroom today is my colleague Lawson Fite and Kent Dusen, the president of Sierra Forest Products. Because the government adequately addressed the mootness issue, I'm going to focus my argument on the merits. The Bull Run timber sale does not authorize the commercial harvest of all dead and dying trees along the 17.9 miles of road. Instead, it only authorizes those dead trees that pose a hazard to the roadway and a hazard to the public because they're within striking distance of the road clearing width or could roll onto the road. This sale does not authorize a clear cut, and any undamaged green trees or dead trees that don't pose a hazard, they will be left standing.
The 13E13 just says salvage of dead and or dying trees. It doesn't say it has to be all of them. It doesn't say anything about clear cutting. It just said this sort of operation where you're salvaging dead or dying trees, we think it has to be 250 acres or less in order to be exempt from further environmental review. So why isn't that applicable?
So the removal of hazard trees is distinguishable from salvage harvest because with salvage, any dead tree could be removed. It doesn't prescribe a certain type of silvicultural prescription, it could remove all or some of those within the 250-acre. And the purpose of salvage harvest is different than hazard tree removal. The purpose of salvage harvest is to recover the economic value of those trees, not to...
For environmental effect? I mean, this is all about what is going to have an impact on the environment that we should study further. Why does the purpose of the operation make any difference?
There's two kind of separate questions. The primary purpose is going to determine whether the activity falls within the categorical exclusion. We have to look to the primary purpose to determine whether this is going to have a nexus with the road corridor and a nexus with the repair and maintenance for it to fall within D4, or does it have some other purpose? So let's for example, use E10, which is hazardous fuels reduction. If the thinning doesn't have a connection with hazardous fuels reduction, it's not going to fall within that categorical exclusion. So the primary purpose does matter, but the impacts are relative to the inquiry of, is there going to be extraordinary circumstances in this case? To fall within any of these categorical exclusions, the agency has to determine that there's no extraordinary circumstances, and there are resource conditions under subsection B that the agency is required to evaluate to determine whether there are impacts, and are those impacts significant? Here, the agency determined that the removal of these dead trees right next to an existing road that are not concentrated in a single area, and in accordance with its hazard tree guidelines and its forest plan, that activity is not going to present extraordinary circumstances. It's not going to have significant impacts to the Pacific fisher, the California spotted owl, the mountain yellow-legged frog. And Earth Island on appeal does not challenge the Forest Service's well-reasoned determination with respect to extraordinary circumstances.
So are you drawing a distinction between a salvage operation that could be conducted anywhere in the forest without regard to its proximity to forest roads, which clearly addresses, as my colleagues have pointed out, salvage of fire-damaged trees, and removal of hazardous trees as part of road maintenance and safety of the traveling public?
There's a difference there because, again, the road maintenance, there has to be a nexus to the road corridor and a nexus to repair maintenance, and there's a qualitative constraint because those trees have to be hazardous trees, whereas under the salvage categorical exclusion, they don't have to be hazard. They can be any dead tree.
And it may well be that the damaged tree still has commercial value if it can be cut before it's ruined from having stood in the forest for too long after being burned.
Yes, Your Honor. The commercial aspect of this is really an implementation choice, and the Forest Service has many implementation choices. They can use a service contract. They can use their own funding mechanism to remove the hazardous trees. I see I'm out of time.
I understand your argument, but I want to ask you one more question. It seems to me that what you try to do is you try to rely on a more general portion of a regulation giving broad discretion for the road maintenance. And we're looking at under E13 for a specific provision as it relates to, if you will, the salvage of dead and dying trees. So what the Supreme Court has said in Radlax, Gateway Hotel, is that we rely on the specific over the general. How do you respond to that? At that point, it would seem to me that we're really looking at E13 and not D4, as you ask us to look.
The E13 is not a specific versus the general. It's a different categorical exclusion. And if we look at the Federal Register in promulgating E13, the Forest Service made clear that there may be overlapping categorical exclusions, and it noted E10 as an example. But this newly added CE adds to existing authority.
Looking at something quite general, which looks at all road maintenance, and we're saying this is specifically about salvaging dead or dying trees, and that's what's happening here. And so that, again, I bring you back. Why is it I should look at this general authorization you've got under D4 when E13 seems specific to what we have here?
Your Honor, I disagree that this categorical exclusion is somehow more specific than D4. They're just different.
You got any good legal authority for that argument?
There is the categorical exclusions haven't been separated in that way. They're just there's nothing to suggest that some are more specific and that they subsume or limit other categorical exclusions.
Isn't the answer to Judge Smith's question that this is not a salvage operation?
Exactly. It's a different type of harvest. Exactly. It's dealing with hazard trees versus salvage. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you for your argument. There's some time for rebuttal.
36 CFR Section 220.4 is an emergency provision that allows the Forest Service to carry out emergency activities without NEPA compliance. So if there was ever an emergency, they have the authority to do that without relying on a wrong categorical exclusion.
But doesn't the Forest Service have to make the determination of how quickly these burn trees need to be removed if they happen to be located along the right-of-way of a Forest Service road?
But keep in mind, Your Honor, they took a year to plan this, very adequate time to do an environmental analysis. And the agency's own rules anticipates that to get salvage timber before it goes bad, for instance, it's fine to do it if under 250 acres.
Salvage timber, but I don't know if it's in the record in this case or from my experience in handling other timber cases, but am I correct that a tree has about a three-year usable lifespan after it's been burned in a wildland fire before it is no longer commercially viable?
I think it depends on the species, but and it's a gradual.
Yeah, no, I realize.
Let's say, sure, 3 years.
And it depends on how badly burned the tree is and all that. Yeah, yeah.
But an environmental analysis is not like an environmental impact statement. An environmental analysis can and usually is carried out in the span of a couple of months, easily within the span that they chose to do.
But if the purpose of the project is really more safety and maintenance than it is sale of commercially salvageable timber, why can't the agency make the determination that for safety reasons we need to move forward and there's no need to do an environmental impact statement because we're either going to take these trees now while they still have some value or we're just going to close the road?
Well, that wasn't the choice. They could have done an environmental analysis and gotten this done in the same amount of time, exactly the same amount of time. And 40 CFR 1508.4 is the larger regulations governing all agencies, and it says an agency can develop a categorical exclusion rule if it finds that the impacts of the action can be excluded. The purpose is absolutely irrelevant. It's the impacts, in this case, from the logging equipment on the soils, and from removing timber that some people, including my plaintiffs, think should be left for wildlife purposes.
They were cutting the trees by hand, and I mean, we're not building access roads here like we normally would to a timber sale.
No roads, but there is the standard heavy machinery involved in the timber sale.
Okay.
It's not just by hand.
But we're not talking about haul roads and that sort of thing.
Not roads, but machines going over land that compact soils and everything else. I'm out of time.
We thank both sides for the argument. The case of Earth Island Institute versus Elliott is submitted.